Hi, my name is Corey Alanis, and I'm from Tip of the Met Watershed Council. In this podcast, we interviewed five different organizations that all contribute to the improvements of road stream crossings. Here's a brief introduction of each person in the interview and what organization they're from, starting with Neil Godby from the Department of Natural Resources.
I'm a fisheries biologist in the Department of Natural Resources in the Northern Lake Huron Management Unit. So we cover water bodies, everything that flows into Lake Huron from the Osable River watershed, so essentially Grayling and Oscoda, a little bit south, north to Sault Ste. Marie. So we cover a lot of different species, a lot of different water types, etc. It includes trout fisheries, the Osable, the pigeon, the sturgeon, the black, the maple, you know, some of those, as well as some well-known walleye fisheries and sturgeon fisheries, you know, burt, mullet, and black lake. So lots of things to think about and keep track of.
My name is Noah Jansen, and I am the restoration manager at the Watershed Council. So I work on coordinating a lot of our on-the-ground restoration projects, and that includes nature-based stormwater solutions, shoreline and stream bank restoration, dam removals, and road stream crossings, and anything else that comes my way.
My name is Teresa Salvetta. I work for the Michigan Department of Environment, Great Lakes, and Energy, also known as EGLE. Specifically, I cover the non-point source program for the Gaylord and Cadillac District offices, which include 22 counties in the northern lower peninsula.
Well, I'm Brent Shank. I'm the engineer manager of the Road Commission. I manage day-to-day operations and am responsible for road design.
Chris Pierce, I'm one of the senior project manager and biologist with Conservation Resource Alliance. We're a small nonprofit out of Traverse City. We cover about 15 counties in northwest lower Michigan.
What is your take on what is a watershed? What does that maybe mean to Tip of the Met Watershed Council? How do you view that in an area?
Yeah, so a watershed is all of the land area that drains into a certain water body. So if you think about the land as being a series of bowls or basins, whatever is on the land, whether it's forests or cities or agriculture, all of those things have an influence on the water quality because everything's draining down into that water body.
Every drop of water, every bit of snowmelt that's in that bowl or basin drains all to one place. So they can be on a large scale or a small scale, but a small scale would be like your backyard. Any rainfall that falls or snow that melts off might run into the nearest stream that runs through your neighborhood, which then runs into maybe another river or a lake. And those lakes and rivers run into a larger river, and ultimately everything in Michigan runs to a Great Lake. So basically, anywhere you're at any given time, you're in a watershed.
If we can, let's talk a little bit about the rivers and streams in these watersheds. What is stream connectivity, and why should it matter to anyone?
So stream connectivity is when a stream or a river system can flow freely through its landscape, and all of the organisms in the river can move up and down and around, and they don't get stuck somewhere by some obstruction or pinch point, like dams or improper road stream crossings.
Yeah. What is the difference in between a stream that's maybe not as connected as well to one that is connected?
Well, we basically lose functions of the streams and rivers when we disconnect the sections from each other or don't have that connectivity. So what can happen is if we have a heavy rainfall and the water can't flow the way that it needs to, the biggest thing that happens and that most people can relate to or understand is flooding. One thing also to think about, you know, we talk about water being able to flow downstream in the stream channel. But the other connectivity we talk about a lot in our work is floodplain connectivity. So the floodplains are the areas adjacent to the streams and rivers that when we do get those big rainfalls, if we have a floodplain, our river can just naturally overflow into the floodplain. And we do lose a lot of that with development, where our floodplains are developed or rivers or streams are channelized and disconnected from their floodplain. And then that much more water has to make its way downstream because it can't overflow into the surrounding floodplain areas. And I mean, a lot of our floodplain areas are wetlands. Those areas are really important too for absorbing pollutants like nutrients and sediment.
Like a big sponge pulling it out, basically.
Yeah, and so if you don't have that, everything has to flush downstream. upstream, and eventually that impact from those pollutants that aren't getting filtered out by our floodplains and wetlands, you know, it's a cumulative impact as you work your way downstream.
So we're going to look at what are the current problems with road stream crossings and why are we changing the current system?
So road stream crossings obviously are intersection where a road crosses a stream, and depending on the size of that stream, type of road, etc., the crossing can take many forms, from a small culvert, foot or less in diameter, to a long suspension bridge. Problems can occur a number of different ways.
The current problems with a lot of these culvert crossings or road stream crossings are they're old and outdated. A lot of times these culverts are 40 to 60 plus years old, and we didn't really have the science nailed down back then. So it was the quickest, easiest fix often, and not really paying attention to the science. You know, if those poorly designed culverts are set wrong, it could become just like a dam, a full fish passage, aquatic organism barrier for nutrient moving downstream or any organism trying to move upstream, you know, not right. Just fish.
What happens upstream when you have something like an undersized culvert?
So when you get a high water event, when you get too much discharge coming, you create erosion, you create back eddying, so your channels all of a sudden becoming wider. And then on the downstream end, you have velocity that's also creating unnatural plunge pools and overwidening of the stream. If it's drastically impounding water, you can have warming effects. Flooding can happen. With a poorly designed culvert, you create the upstream flooding, but if you lose your road, that can in turn have downstream flooding effects as well.
Okay. With road stream crossings, what is Eagle's perspective on it?
Yeah, so a lot of road stream crossings are just undersized or misaligned, so there's not enough room for a river stream to flow through, whether it's a culvert or a tube or even a bridge. They're not big enough or wide enough, and most culverts are set 100% perpendicular to the road.
You know, if the stream is not perpendicular to the road, if it's coming in at an angle, that's going to create more problems, because where that stream then meets that culvert, that's going to be a place where you have a lot of water force coming in. It's going to tend to erode basically at that corner where the stream meets the culvert.
So it'd really be possibly even eroding behind the culvert, because mm-hmm. all the water is going that way instead of into the culvert where it needs to.
Yeah, and if it's not protected in some way, then eventually you're undermining the culvert and the road itself.
What does stream connectivity mean to you, Neil?
Stream connectivity basically allows for the free movement and transport of water, one, aquatic organisms, whether you're talking fish, reptiles, amphibians, insects, you know, macroinvertebrates, stuff like that. But you also have to think about sediment and nutrients and large woody debris, logs and sticks and all that as they float. When you don't have connectivity, it fragments the watershed, which kind of isolates different parts, so that fragmentation can interrupt that movement of not only fish and nutrients and things, but also sediment. So that acts like a dam, which has profound effects throughout the watershed.
For you, what is the importance of biodiversity and why the fish and insects are really important when it comes to being throughout the whole stream?
Well, I mean, it's all an ecosystem, and a lot of what's happening in rivers and streams we don't really see, because there's so many insects, or macro, we refer to them as macroinvertebrates, that are living in our streams that until you really start looking, you don't realize how many are really there. And it's all part of a food chain. And as you disconnect sections of stream from each other, you're limiting what fish can live there. And if they can't get to another part of the stream, or their food can't get to another part of the stream, you know, you're just disrupting the entire system.
Really, what are the problems with improper road stream crossings? And what are even types of improper road stream crossings?
So perched culvert, that's an improperly placed culvert. It might be the right size, but there's a waterfall coming down.
Yeah.
And fish, at least at certain times of the year, and other aquatic organisms aren't able to get up into that culvert and access upstream reaches of the river. That acts as a barrier to fish passage, especially for non-jumping species. So perched culverts that don't follow the bed of the stream or the profile of the stream are a problem. As our undersized culverts, you think about if you've got a high stream flow event, think of the fire hose effect. You know, you're pushing a lot of water in there, that smaller diameter, water is going really fast. Well, different fish species have different swimming speed that they can achieve both short term and long term. So length of the culvert is also important. If it's too small, water might be going too fast. On the flip side of that coin, culvert that's too wide and too big, some points, water may be too shallow and basically just got a skim of water on it, you know, so it's acting as a barrier at those points.
You know, there's definitely some environmental impacts at road stream crossings that are installed improperly or undersized. The erosion that can occur leads to additional sediments, especially finer sediments like silt, and then it just covers a lot of the habitat, like the gravel and the cobble that particularly some high-quality macro invertebrates need for living.
So if there's like a damming effect, when the water comes to a restriction point, like an undersized culvert, a lot of the sediment that is carried by the river will get deposited out because the water slows down at that point and the water isn't moving as fast, it can't carry as much load, and that sediment settles out. On the downstream end, you get more erosion because the water is lacking sediment because it just deposited it upstream, and so it's going to pick up new sediment and start eroding, and that causes problems as well.
Yeah, absolutely. What are your thoughts on these crossings causing more erosion?
So if there's an undersized culvert, you often get flooding at the upstream end because all that water can't be accommodated by the small culvert, and that can kill the vegetation on the banks there. Without the vegetation, there's not much to hold the soil. There's a certain threshold where when the water speed is too high, you get destabilization of the banks. The plants can't hold the soil anymore, and then you get more erosion.
What are the Road Commission's thoughts on road maintenance? What do they currently have to keep up with improper road stream crossings? Do you guys have a list that you have as far as like ones that you really want to keep an eye on for future projects?
Not a specific list. We kind of know where our bad crossings are out there, and it's a little bit more extra maintenance to keep the berms down off the road so that the water's not getting concentrated as it comes off and erodes the crossing itself beyond what the undersized tube might be doing. We'll monitor our shoulders to make sure they're not building up and creating our country berms. Over time, whether it's a gravel road or a paved road, that shoulder will build up and then the water finds its way off right at the stream and erodes the crossing itself.
Yeah. How does fixing road stream crossings create lasting road health?
The biggest thing for lasting road health is controlling drainage on our roads, whether it's surface drainage or ground drainage. And when we can improve road crossings, it hits both topics for us. So we can better control the water, get it off the road better, and get it away from our road. We can get it into a larger filter area through some grass or other kind of vegetation before we start loading a stream up with sediment from a gravel road surface or even paved crossing that will carry sediment off the road.
Okay. And so is there any other ways that this affects the community?
Well, from the road network standpoint, if we have a failure on one, it definitely affects access, especially if it's a one way in, one way out for residents, or some of our crossings can create some pretty significant detours if they have to be shut down.
So how does a proper road stream crossing help with access or any other ways that you can think of?
So from a recreational standpoint, let's say a road stream crossing that's popular for people to go paddling at. It's important to incorporate that aspect of design into these to make sure that you have proper access down there for people in canoes and kayaks or that want to go fishing, you know, that it's still accessible for people to drag their boats down to the river's edge without affecting the embankments, without affecting their boats. By opening these structures, for as far as paddling efforts go, you don't have to get out and do a portage. You can just keep cruising.
Yeah.
You know, I've been on trips that you have to portage, and it's way better if you can just go and not have to worry about your family crossing the road or dumping your cooler or whatever. If they have to get out of the stream and get their kayaks out, I think that really deters people. But if folks can go through a culvert or under a bridge safely and not have to portage across the road, it's just better and just safer. If you don't have to portage, then maybe you'll bring your kids too. Your whole family can enjoy the activity.
Right. How does a road stream crossing help with tourism?
So we do a lot of the timber bridges up here in Emmett County. So from the tourism aspect, they're just very pleasing on the eye. I mean, I think my personal opinion, if people are driving around, that it might leave a lasting impression. Like, wow, every river that we drove across has all these really cool timber bridges.
Looks way nicer than a rusty old culvert. So I think that aesthetics is definitely an aspect that is a secondary benefit of doing these proper road stream crossings. And on our natural rivers, some of that actually comes into play on the rivers in Michigan that are designated as natural rivers by the DNR. That's a big part of what you're looking at. They have to be designed to kind of fit into that aesthetic part of the natural river system.
Yeah. All right, so next we're going to talk about a little bit of what are the hurdles that come up with these projects.
You know, you've mentioned that you've been working on the maple for 19, 20 years. How does CRA deal with safely installing bridges if there are endangered species such as the monkey flower, Hungerfords? You know, if there's any cutting of trees, can that affect the bats or snakes? How do you guys plan for that, and do you adjust when it comes up to those, if those species are there at those road stream crossings?
So a lot of our road stream crossings need tree removal around the old culverts. So first of all, you have to identify, you know, roost trees and specific trees that a bat might use. And if you are doing removal, then there's a certain window that you do the removal when the bats are not around, which would typically be winter. The rattlesnake, for instance, again, dewatering certain times of the year. If you do have impounding flooding effects from a dam, that can have effects on certain species, snakes, turtles, frogs. The type of netting that you put down for erosion control on your embankments, there's snake killer type stuff that we're getting away from, more environmentally friendly. You know, critters can escape if they get underneath it. You know, turtles use those embankments a lot for laying eggs. So there's designs out there to protect turtle nesting areas too. If you have a known turtle area, you can set up devices that protect them from creatures that come in and eat their eggs. With the Hungerford crawling water beetle, we do a pre-construction survey for existing beetles, and whatever beetles you find, you relocate to a suitable location upstream or downstream from your construction, which has to be approved through Fish and Wildlife. Okay. So there's definitely best management practices that you have to incorporate into your design and your plan for these projects.
Have you noticed a difference on certain rivers that have changed through stream connectivity or building better road stream crossings?
I would say some of the biggest changes that we see over the years as we continue to improve road stream crossings, primarily the movement of those fine sediments like silt through the systems. And as we allow them to move through the system, then we start to expose those coarser sediments like gravel and cobble, which leads to an improved habitat quality for invertebrates and fish. And then movement of fish into spawning areas that were previously inaccessible. As you continue these habitat improvements, you start seeing an increase in the number of fish and also the size of fish. We'll also see more habitat improvements in the riparian areas. So having that floodplain connectivity and keeping the habitat around the stream actually makes rivers healthier too.
Yeah, that's really amazing.
So it's really just an interesting balance of humans and nature, I think, to be able to do what we want to do and what we need to do and have the least amount of negative impact on our river systems and natural resources.
Was there any other information that you want the general public to know about this project and what people can do or how this info is helpful to their community?
It's something that people don't really think about. You just drive over the road stream crossings. Maybe there's a sign there that says this is such and such river, and you think, oh, there's a creek there. But sometimes you can't even see it. So for most people, these are like out of sight, out of mind. If they're not functioning well and you're getting flooding over the road, then people start to notice.
So community members can help by being aware of the issues that are associated with poor road stream crossings and other barriers such as dams. Folks can certainly educate themselves on what to look for and ways that they can be involved. And I think it's important to understand that the long-lasting environmental and infrastructure improvements will benefit the communities and the regions in many ways.
I would just go back to the first question we talked about a watershed. Just as we should all treat each other kindly, we should treat our land and Mother Nature just as kind. Do our due diligence now to make sure things that we are working on last.
Yeah.
And need to keep it here for as many future generations as possible. And then working together with local people and partnerships to build the resiliency in the community and in our natural systems.